This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Jody Hildebrandt, she built a reputation as a trusted therapist. But what she actually did to her clients was anything but healing. Instead of offering guidance, she controlled, manipulated, and allegedly destroyed lives under the guise of self-improvement. Now, with new lawsuits and a chilling documentary exposing her methods, we have to ask, how does someone gain that much psychological control over people who seek their help? And why do smart, rational individuals fall into the grip of someone like Hildebrandt? To break it down, we're joined by psychotherapist Siobhan Scott. Siobhan, when we're looking at a case like this, I mean, what sort of tactics do individuals like Hildebrandt use to gain, you know, this type of control over their victims, basically?
Yeah, Jody, I have my four C's for a cult leader: charismatic, confident, coercive, and controlling. And she was a master at it, and she got rich. My God, her 9,000 square foot home, I mean, was just incredible, the amount of money this lady was raking in. And she really manipulated the vulnerable. And she was validated by the LDS church. They were referring people to her. And so she preyed on people who tended to obey authority. And she made them feel like, this came out in the documentary, that they were special for having the privilege of her help. And she alone had the truth. And that those are the classic tactics of a cult leader. And then once you had this cohesive group of followers, they reinforced in each other that she really is this wise leader that is going to save our families and our marriages. And she made ridiculous promises about the benefit that people would have from being in her program. So she was good at what she did until they got into child abuse. So,
how dangerous is counseling or therapy? It's not truly therapy unless you're, you know, seeing a therapist. When it comes to religious organizations that offer that, we hear that quite often, where, oh, I'm not going to see a therapist, I'm going to go talk to somebody at the church who knows about this or is going to help counsel me. I mean, it just seems like a ripe ground in many cases. And I'm sure there are well-intended, good people out there in that world. But at the same point, you're really kind of playing Russian roulette a little bit with your mind, are you not, when you go down that road?
Yeah, yeah. It depends so much on the faith group, because there are pastoral counselors who have had a lot of training. Some of them even have master's degrees in psychology, you know, not many, but I have met some that do. And so they really function pretty well for their flock. But I would say the majority don't have much, if any, formal training. And when you get into a cult-like faith or a faith that is pretty much out of the mainstream of the culture, you're really risking your own mental health if you go that route, particularly if you're having serious problems.
Well, and it like you said, it does seem to, and I'm not trying to be anti-religious or anything, whatever, but I'm just pointing out kind of the obvious here. It seems just like a ripe ground for people to prey on those who are easily manipulated, are easily someone who can have blind faith in something. I mean, that's what religion is. Have this faith in this thing that we can't really prove, but you gotta believe it. So why would all these other people who make you feel good, why would they be wrong? It's a scary situation. I mean, I remember years ago, the person that I was with wanted to go to a church, so we went, and they had this group where they were trying to, you know, help marriages and things of that nature, and they were asking for, you know, volunteers from the congregation who had no sort of training in this world at all to sign up for these classes, and then you can be a counselor to these people who are coming to us and say that they want some help. And out of somewhat curiosity and somewhat of pushing of an ex, I was like, oh, let's try this out. Because, I mean, I'm obviously interested in this area, and I feel like I can offer something, but I'm not a therapist or anything like that, like you are, and nowhere near qualified to administer anything like that. But they were just signing up people left and right for this sort of thing. It just seems so, so reckless. But this seems to go on in a lot of places with no oversight.
Yeah, that's the thing. There is no oversight of what churches do. And we see sexual abuse. We see all kinds of people, even when there's domestic violence, people are pressured to stay together. And yeah, there's a very dark side to religion.
How is it that you think that Jody was able to have such control over people, to make them... Did she make people change? Did she make some of these? And I'm just speaking of some of the cases that we've seen here specifically. I'm not being sexist. I'm saying in the cases that we know about here, it was the wife in these situations that really got under the control of Jody more so than the men, because she didn't really seem to speak to the men very much. They were very much demonized. But is that someone who already has kind of a predisposition to go down that route and to have that sort of hate for men, or is looking for a reason to be a victim or to place blame, and that's what she really spoke to with some of these people? Or is it something deeper and darker where she was able to, you know, basically brainwash people to think things in ways that they never otherwise would have really been capable of necessarily on their own?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. Part of the control that she exerted was her obsession with sex and obsession with masturbation. It's again, it's in the very strange category, mm-hmm. and one has to wonder about her histories. There was a report, I don't know how accurate it can be, that she was molested as a child, and so that could certainly leave her with a lot of residual anger that she was not dealing with directly. And so that kind of leaked out with her anti-male attitudes. But, and this coincided with the Mormon Church, which was interesting to me, that the active masturbation was one step away from killing someone. It was that sinful and that evil. And for people who have been raised with this belief, and obviously, they've got sexual urges, part of humanity. People masturbate. That's, you know,
sure.
We know that's part of life. It left people with an incredible amount of shame, and she exploited that shame. And that evil of masturbation, she did set up sort of like AA addiction programs around sexuality and had all the men going to these groups, and it got really elaborate where they had to call 7 men every day to check in with each other on who had touched themselves. I mean, just, you know, strange stuff. But I think, again, it was people from the LDS faith who came in with some unusual indoctrination, and then she took it and ran with it and leaked her own issues all over the place.
Just the fact that you get people to agree with this, like, yeah, let me call the 7 guys and go, hey, who touched themselves today? I mean, just where, I mean, that takes quite a bit, I would think, to go, oh, this is normal, this is healthy.
Exactly. The things people can be convinced to do, or like Nexium, here, we're going to put a brand on you. Okay. You know, and these are people that have jobs out in the world, and most of us would look at them superficially and think that they're normal.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, is anyone susceptible to becoming a victim of, you know, a cult? That's very much kind of what this was in a different sort of sense than we think of other cults, or does this take a special type of individual to be able to be susceptible to something like this?
I think there are definitely people who are susceptible. I don't think all of us would go for that. If you're an independent thinker, if you're a person who does logic well, you're going to know this whole stuff is stinky and it doesn't add up and it's bizarre. But if you're raised in a faith, or whether it's a faith or a political system or whatever, where you're told truth is really black and white, mm-hmm. and you're taught to feel shame when you're not perfect, that makes you vulnerable to this idea that there is an expert, that there's this hierarchy, and that you have to respect the expert or the person who's holy, or the person at the top of the hierarchy, you know, the prophet, whatever mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah.
the guru. And I think there are some people who are really prone to that way of thinking. And I don't think it's most of us, but there are enough apparently to keep these groups going.
And that's really what it seems she kind of became. She became the guru. She became the expert. She became almost like a prophet, if you will. And I think that that was explained in the documentary a bit. I know you've seen it. I have not quite seen it yet. But I mean, that's a weird way of thinking to basically ordain yourself to be some sort of, you know, mystical creature that has these sort of powers. Is that something that you think she always felt and always had, or is that kind of a slow build for someone like Jodi Hildebrandt, where eventually she just kind of believes her own nonsense and thinks, oh yes, I really am this? Or does she believe it at all and she just knows other people believe it, so I better keep saying it?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a mix of a few of those things. I think she had personality problems from the get-go. Probably in adolescence, she was off in some ways. And then over time, found a sense of power from coming up with her shtick and as I think, taking her own abuse history, if that's true, and acting it out in this way that was really pretty overtly hostile towards men, separating from their families. And so it was really a mix of a person with a personality problem and then gradually finding that she could maneuver and gain power. And I think she probably did believe the crazy stuff. You know, she also believed in demon possession. There were a lot of echoes of the Daybells, but yeah, without the psychotic piece going on here, but a lot of the same control tactics and the same kinds of beliefs.
Were you surprised when she pled guilty to the charges? Because I think sometimes like this, like we see Lori Daybell and she's still pleading not guilty and she's still talking about the kids working at McDonald's in heaven and everything is great. And just this delusion continues to go on. But Jodi and Ruby both said, yeah, we did it. Yes, we did these horrible, horrible things and we're sorry for them. Punish us. I mean, that was a weird part to me, the fact that they even admitted that. How did you take that?
I take that as it's more evidence that these ladies were not psychotic. They were messed up in a lot of different ways, but they were not having delusions and hallucinations. And they were grounded enough in reality. They probably got legal counsel. You are busted. You are not going to get out of this. And they took the deal because it was simply, they knew that they were not going to have a way out. And it could be much worse if they did not plead guilty.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.